Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see a Jew.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks to everybody who listens in every single week, with the new episodes arriving every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Always appreciate your listening. Always appreciate your feedback or comments, wherever you're getting this from. Even the folks who just say hi, listening from wherever you're listening from. That's always fun to hear as well. If you're not a subscriber, though, I hope you do take that chance to keep up with us wherever you get your podcast from, probably wherever you're listening to this right now. Of course, you can find us at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, even on YouTube, and all the rest of the podcast land as well. Just type in Kyle Meredith with, hit that subscribe button. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is Rufus Wainwright. Now, Rufus is one of my all-time favorite artists, as he is for a whole lot of you out there. And for those who do follow, you've probably noticed over the past few years, at least since 2012's Out of the Game, he hasn't really given us a typical Rufus Wainwright record, as we know them anyway. There have been operas, there has been Shakespeare excursions, but that all ends now with the record Unfollowed. Follow the Rules. And it's an album that we're going to be talking a lot about. First off, with what Rufus calls second act greatness. This is what he sees as his big second act. So it's a record that speaks to his past, but also kind of sets up for whatever comes next. We'll do some comparisons, too, to his friend Leonard Cohen, to Frank Sinatra. He mentions Paul Simon and the way that they kind of turned midway through their career, many of them to release, their biggest records. You'll hear about what new things he gathers from pop after leaving it for most of the decade. And the album itself, it's one that kind of, there's a lot happening, but for chunks of it, he kind of pays tribute to Laurel Canyon, which is, the area he's living in these days. So we'll be talking about the myths of that area and the history and what it's like today. And was that magic still alive? And one of its biggest artists, maybe the queen of Laurel Canyon, Joni Mitchell, who Rufus is a close friend of, kind of also arrives in this record, not personally, but in the song Damsel in Distress. We'll hear exactly how she plays into that with inspiration. And it's also with that in mind, I gotta ask, Rufus has got a lot of famous friends, a lot of famous stories. I kind of want to hear about what his circle of friends is like and what his life is like on a daily basis as well. And from there, we're also going to be hearing about the future. Again, he calls it his second act. What does that mean in comparison to what he's done? And he's going to let us know a little bit at least, a teaser about what we can expect next. So let's get into it. The album is called Unfollow the Rules. It's Kyle Meredith with Rufus Wainwright.
Hello.
Well, this record, Unfollow the Rules, it's such a great little record that we've had a lot of fun playing so far. And honestly, I think it's been said already, but it's nice to hear you kind of in this venue again with these type of songs.
Yes. Yeah, no, I had a fabulous journey to the nether regions of musical kind of ability, especially when you put in the opera work. I mean, it's a universe I adore and I will return to, but nonetheless, it's great to be back and just doing what I'm really sort of mainly fashioned to do, which is to write songs and sing them and put my heart forward.
Did leaving pop for this extended period of time, did that teach you anything new about the genre? Was it one of those kind of scenarios?
Yeah, I mean, anything I've done in this sense, whether it's, going to make a pop record or going to write an opera or doing the Judy Garland record, it's always been from a sincere desire just to do that for its own sake. I never have an ulterior motive, that I can, gild, either one of my careers with the other stuff. But that being said, inevitably you bring things back and forth. And I will say that, now in hindsight, I think this album is imbued with a little more drama, a little more kind of depth, and some more refinement, which I probably learned while working with, orchestras with a certain time limit.
I think the story goes, the first time around, I know you've said that in some interviews, that you're working with orchestras and something like that, the time limit wasn't really on mind.
Yeah. No, I mean, when I started out in the business 20 years ago, it was an incredibly lavish kind of situation. I was, on DreamWorks, which at the time was a huge record label. Now it doesn't exist anymore. But anyways, so I was a bit spoiled. And this record for me, really, and this is very much thanks to Mitchell Froom, the producer. He really made sure to both, keep the tradition of my, of my kind of glamorous sound, but with a certain economy and a certain, just eye on the budget. And I think, oddly enough, it worked well for the music. There's this kind of directness, which works.
Is it true that there are songs on here that are one-take songs?
It's not that they're one-take. It's that there's not a ton of takes to choose from. Like, the way to best illustrate that is that, in the past, I would have, gotten a guitar player, let's say, and had him play all afternoon and do all sorts of crazy things, and then, sift through it over the many months that I was, lavished with to make the record. But with this case, the guitar player would come in and he would just play a part and we'd be like, that's the part, let's go in and correct it, and that's it. And you're done in, 3 hours as opposed to 3 months. So it's just sort of more that that direct idea and that concept of, doing what works right away.
Now, one thing I've been interested that you've talked about here, I wrote down the phrase second act greatness. You've mentioned
right.
Leonard Cohen. You've mentioned you mentioned Sinatra, I think, and lots of other names. What do those periods look like musically? What does a second act period mean to you?
I can only speak of this in terms of like the male side of show business because I am male. I identify as male, mm-hmm. and there is this tradition with a lot of artists like Leonard Cohen, like Frank Sinatra, Paul Simon, people like that who, you know, in their they sort of had this scrambled period in their, you know, really between their 30s and arguably 40s or 50s, where they just, you know, they're kind of mourning the passing of their unbridled youth, and there's a real confusion in terms of what am I, you know, am I a dad or a lover or what? And then somehow, when they kind of get over that early crisis, because it's not quite a midlife crisis, they can reemerge as more of a kind of I don't know, more of a man, really, more of a complete figure, and have hopefully have a little bit of wiseness, I want to say. Doesn't sound very nice, that word, but but you know, and offer something with a lot of perspective, and not only about being, you know, this kind of young Turk, but also being slightly sage. So yeah, I'm kind of going for that pocket, I guess.
Like when I first read that, my first thought was less on Leonard, but more like a September my years, Sinatra, something like that. I was like, oh, there's that confusion.
It's funny with Sinatra because, I mean, I'm not the biggest Sinatra fan. I mean, I admire him. I understand why he's so great, and I get it. But when they did the centenary a few years ago, and there was this big, you know, there was that documentary on PBS, that very long, you know, involved documentary, it was so fascinating to watch. And it really affected me deeply, especially, you know, when he hit his 40s and sort of really became Sinatra. You know, before then it was always this, was he kind of a matinee idol? Was he like a skinny jerk? You know, he was always a great singer, but you know, was it only, you know, it was never quite clear what his spot was. But then in his 40s, once he put that hat on, he was suddenly lethal.
it is fascinating to watch, you know, the artists that can do that, because not every artist do that. So many falter when they hit that midlife period where it just seems like the creativity gets sucked out for some reason.
Yeah.
You don't seem to have that, especially judging from an album like this and the creativity that's happened in the last few years. What's the secret, if there is at all?
Well, look, I mean, we'll see how the album does. So I wouldn't count my eggs, my chicks before they've hatched. But that being said, I will say that I've made a really conscious effort all my musical life to explore really interesting avenues and try and challenge myself on several fronts, whether it's as a singer, or as a composer, or as a songwriter, and without any kind of regard for financial kind of markets, you know, or what was, you know, the flavor of the month at that certain time. I just totally disregarded that. It's just always been about, you know, the fundamentals of music, and of great music at that. So I went off and did that, and I guess hopefully now, you know, my gamble is starting to pay off. You know, I have developed into an artist that now, through my travels and my experiences, has something to give back that is lasting. Because that's always been the music that has interested me most. I appreciate the fads of the day, and actually, I'm kind of jealous of a lot of the artists who managed to like really hit the nail on the head with what's going on right now. But my soul has always been driven to what's eternal, you know, and what has lasted for hundreds of years. And you know, so that's I don't know. I think that's what I'm. That's the horse I've chosen to ride on, and I'm coming back through the village now.
Well, it's kind of interesting that you word it that way, because one of those villages is Laurel Canyon, I think, and has a big thing to do with this record.
Yeah.
And we know it is so much of a myth and the dream of the 70s. And I hear You Ain't Big, and I hear the Laurel Canyon. Is that one of those moments on the record that specifically speaks to that?
That song in particular reflects my great love of Americana, you know, and whether it's country music or folk music or Laurel Canyon, which was kind of influenced by both at the same time. You know, I am both a student of that style at this point, certainly living here now in Laurel Canyon. But also I'm from that is my heritage as well. I mean, my mother was Linda Ronstadt used to sing my mother's songs. So it's a long time. It's been several cycles that I've been involved in.
Is there still magic in Laurel Canyon, the way we perceive it?
Oh yes, there still is. I mean, I think it's perhaps more fleeting now than it was back in the day. But I don't know. There's something. I think it's more just the sort of surreal quality of this little kind of almost forest-like environment and very rustic feel right up against this huge city, big dirty LA city, and. And just how, in an instant you're suddenly transported to this fantasy land. Yeah, I don't think it is what it once was, but I don't know too. There's stuff going on in these hills that I'm kind of fascinated by, and think is probably pretty out there. So it could all be happening as well. But I'm also just a little older.
And we can't hold every spot that's ever had a magical moment to keep on itself, to keep true to itself. The way we have it in our mind anyway forever, but there seems to be something about that place that holds on to it more than other places.
Yes. No, it's true. And it's sort of, I think the other thing is that a lot of those great artists are still thankfully with us. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be forever, but Joni Mitchell still lives around here, and Neil Young and is in LA. So the souls are still on this planet. And I do feel like in a way with this album, there's also a kind of nod to the fact that those people are still around, and that what for years seemed to me overkill in the sense, like, how many times was Bruce Springsteen on the cover of Rolling Stone all throughout my career, now it's a bit more precious because it is the final act.
Well, you mentioned Joni. She kind of makes her way into the record, at least by spirit, in this song Damsel in Distress. Is that right?
Yes. She that song is very much, it's not about her, Damsel in Distress. Mm-hmm. Though she could be coined as that at times. But anyways, but it's more the chord structures and the harmonies that I think were very influenced by her style.
It's such a great little song. And I'll have to sidebar here too, because I love hearing your stories, and a lot of your stories have to do with other people that we're aware of, famous friends or whatever.
Right.
I got to ask, are most of your friends artists?
Well, I would say, yes, I am friends with a lot of artists, and I would consider most of those friends to be fairly close, more than acquaintances, let's say. On the other hand, I'm 46 years old, and I have, we have a child, and so a lot of our world is becoming more focused on the needs at hand. And I would say, like, really, I have about five or six friends now who I refer to, and about, three of them are artists and two of them aren't, it's sort of, and they're not, they're not super famous or anything. So it's actually quite pedestrian when you boil it down.
Right.
But if I have to throw a fabulous dinner party, I can.
It's what I think about all those great artistic circles through the years, whether it stretches back to something like the Algonquin or just, whatever. But I feel like the Rufus Wainwright, movie, biopic, book, whatever, when that arrives one day, it's going to have some really good stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, what I love about my kind of world is that I've been able to really have some major contact with classic figures, whether it's Carrie Fisher was a very close friend of mine, or Burt Bacharach, who I see occasionally, Elton, of course, and just certain people who really lived this in these golden ages of art, and then there's some younger ones too who are interesting, and I'm sort of, I don't know, I managed to be a bit of a conduit, I think, from one generation to another.
But you've helped create some of those with the music, and I'm not trying to be over complimentary here, but just there are so many classics that help build that story.
Thank you so much. That's very sweet of you.
If this album, in one sense wraps up one era, does it also start another? And or what does that mean for the next era? Do you know what that next era looks like?
Yeah, well, what I am really happy about in terms of this record is that it is a full circle, you know, from the beginning of my career, which started in L.A. 20 years ago, and with my first record, and even, you know, when you look at the artwork on the cover, there, you know, there's a direct correlation between the two works. You know, and I work with some of the same musicians in some of the same studios. So for me, it's very much a bookend to, you know, the first act of my career, which, you know, when in stepping back is quite illustrious. But it also gives me a chance to wipe the slate clean and start with something completely different. I mean, I've been spending a lot of time in France and kind of listening to artists there, a lot of them who are very avant-garde and very out there and very, you know, disregarding of tradition, and that kind of interests me. So yeah, I think there's going to be another left turn. Sorry, but I'm here now.
I look forward to left turns. I should mention, too, you know, France, I think at least it's French, the B-side of Peaceful Afternoon, that's a French version of that song? Is
yes,
that right?
Yes.
Just for fun?
Yeah, well, just to, France is a market that I've been working diligently to seize for about 20 years, actually, and it's taken that long. They're very, very hard to seduce. So this is the, you know, hopefully this is the knockout punch. So we'll see.
We'll see. Rufus Wainwright, the man of French seduction.
That's
the title of something somewhere. A bootleg. That's what it is.
Yes.
It is such an honor to talk to you again. And this record, Unfollow the Rules, is so good. And just, again, it's great to have you like this. But I'll look forward to Left Turns as well, man. I really will.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. It's been a pleasure. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
My thanks to Rufus Wainwright. Again, the new record is called Unfollow the Rules. Thanks to him for the conversation. Thanks to you for listening to the interview. Before you get out of here, again, if you're already a subscriber, that's awesome. If you can give the series a rating and a review, always a huge help with the whole stats and analytics and keeping us going here. If you're not, I hope you enjoyed what you heard enough to hit that subscribe button. Again, you can find us at Apple Podcasts, iTunes, at Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you prefer to get your podcasts from. Just type in Kyle Meredith With, and that's where you'll find us. We'll deliver new episodes to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's a great way to keep up with all things music, your favorite artists. Let us introduce you to some new artists. And after that, head to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres, of music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews, too. Again, that's WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also find me on just about any social media platform at Kyle Meredith. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.